Welcome to the Limark Technical Net. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the control operator. And every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock, sometimes a little bit later, unfortunately, we get together in front of our radios and we chat and we teach each other, we learn from each other, and hopefully we entertain each other as well. So I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop and I will return and give you the usual links. Okay. If you want to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to reach Paul to ask him a space or NASA-related story, you can reach him with the email address spacenetreport@gmail.com. We offer a link page of interesting articles and YouTubes. I cut and paste them throughout the week, and then I publish them on the weekend, and they stay up for the unforeseeable future. So if you want to thumb through some interesting articles, just go over to your browser, type in roy.ac2gs.com, and that will give you my link page. We don't have a chat room. It's still broken. We do offer an audio stream on the Internet. If you have a friend who doesn't have a radio or is out of radio distance and would like to listen to the audio stream, I have it set up. Just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you to a streaming page. I originally thought that I would just keep it live for the technical net, but some people asked me to keep it live the rest of the week. So it's live the rest of the week. Also, I'd like to remind people that my KC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the Limark technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who either have moved away from the area or unfortunately become silent keys over the years. Their wisdom remains intact in that website, and you can access it anytime that you want. So that's our usual links. Let me drop for a second, and I will return to tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, standard operating technical net tonight. I have a couple of short little comments about artificial intelligence, and then I'll open the space for anyone who wants to make any comments, ask any questions, answer any questions, what have you on that subject. Then we will move on to the main segment of tonight's technical net, the questions, answers, comments, topics of discussion. I'll ask people to hit their push to talk, give me their first name, their call sign, and whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology, and we'll put you on a list, and as the night progresses, we'll work our way down the list. I would prefer if the first few are amateur radio related, since we are an amateur radio net, but we will take in any science and or technology question, and I will try my best. And hopefully we will have clever people out there who can answer the questions as well. In addition, I would prefer the people with kind of long questions or long presentations to put themselves on the list towards the end of the session, because there are some people who just have a very simple question. It takes 5 minutes, and it's a shame if they have to sit around and listen to everyone else for 2-3 hours, before they get in. And sometimes, unfortunately, we run out of time. So if you have a long presentation, save it for the end. If you have a short presentation, especially a short question on amateur radio, try to come in as early as you can, making the list up. So that's it. Hopefully that should take us approximately to 10:15. Paul, WS2N, will join us for the SpaceNet report. And that should take us approximately to 11 p.m. I will return at that point to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If I don't get kicked off of All-Star, if I don't have a problem in my... Peter doesn't have his own problem. That's what we got planned. So let me drop, and I will give you a couple of little tidbits on AI. All right. As you probably know, OpenAI and Elon Musk are having a battle in court, and I'm sure that's going to be exciting for the following week as well. A lot of interesting things people are saying under oath that that wasn't something that they said when they weren't under oath. So it's kind of obscured and slowed down the new announcements for artificial AI, these, you know, artificial intelligence. So we'll see how that goes. Let's see. AI firms have been making apparently classified deals with the Defense Department. So now we can't complain about Big Brother looking in on us because they're not going to tell us. Microsoft has in some ways decoupled the responsibilities and benefits of having bought a good piece of OpenAI in the past. I don't know if that's a beneficial thing for Microsoft or for OpenAI. And Meta recently announced that they had bought into a robot company, so now, unfortunately, not only are they going to screw up those visors, augmented reality and virtual reality, they're also going to screw up robots. So looking forward to how they screw those things up and how many billions of dollars they flush down the toilet. I don't know. None of this stuff is particularly great news as far as I'm aware. Anyway. That's a little tidbit that I've been able to glean from this past week in the world of artificial intelligence. Anyone has any comments about anything that I said or would like to bring up some other aspect of artificial intelligence, feel free. This is the time.
Jim, KD2VHD. Hello, Roy.
Hello, Jim. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate. Jim, you got a question or a comment about AI tonight?
I do. I've been thinking a lot about it since last week. And it was interesting over the last couple of weeks, and I threw out two technical questions that were, they certainly weren't simple or uncomplicated, but they were direct. They were very focused. And small in scope. And it was interesting how many answers came back from folks that were, I don't want to say they were wrong. They weren't. They were irrelevant. They didn't answer the question. And in the week that since last week, I've been thinking how much that parallels what you had talked about, how AI doesn't always give you the right answer, gives you what it thinks you want to hear or some such thing. And, very interesting. Maybe the AI is more human than we realize in its effect. In that, it's troubling. You know, you think of intelligence as somebody, as some entity or person or being, or that will give the right answer. Maybe we're missing something. I'm intrigued by the thing that the answers that come back from the internet. And the net are often not related to the question that was asked. And maybe there's a commonality, maybe there's not. That's as much as I can figure. It's a nebulous question, of course, but back to you. Thanks, Roy.
AC2GS. Well, that's an interesting point, Jim. I think you're pointing out a different aspect of human nature to some one degree or another. Sometimes people don't answer your question because they're kind of in the middle of the question and the answer in a weird way, and they don't actually pick up totally what you're saying. A lot of people, unfortunately, are so busy trying to figure out what the next clever line they should say that they don't listen to the other person. And I've sometimes kind of heard that going on the radio. I usually call that parallel conversations. And some people truly have two different conversations. Person A is talking about one thing and person B is talking about another thing, and it just goes on. It's as though they don't, both sides don't listen. Both sides respond with what's on their mind, and it just continues. And it can go on for a half hour sometimes, and I'm amazed at humanity's capability. So the mechanism is quite different. There is human consciousness involved in us for the most part, but not artificial intelligence. Matter of fact, I recently read a paper on AI where I think it was MIT. I could be wrong. Might have been Harvard. Where they changed the order of suggestions in a prompt, and that changed the answer from the AI. So if you led with one possible answer to a solution, it would more likely pick that one as the favorable one as opposed to the second one that you mentioned, you know. If you just kind of say, I'm thinking it's my spleen, but it could be my liver. You know, it'll come back saying, well, there's a lot to be said about spleens. Let's go into that. So it's interesting. In another way, it's just making you feel happy. It's going along with your biases. And rather than a fundamental question, it's just making you a happy conversationalist, because its primary reason being a large language model is to make you happy with its conversation.
It reminds me of a Home Depot ad slogan that was always the beginning. It was, for years, that was the thing. Home Depot, low prices are just the beginning. Like, where we end up is not necessarily where we start. We're going to start with the low prices. Where we end up might not be that way. Seems to be similarities. It's interesting human nature stuff going on here. Lots to think about.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. A matter of fact, it's curious. You know, when I got into this hobby, I really didn't think I was going to need to brush up on my psychiatry training from medical school. But I have, and it's been a valuable asset.
Communication is definitely a multifaceted word, no doubt.
Yep. Well, humanity in general. We're an irrational group of organisms. We do some things that make a lot of sense and some things that make no sense whatsoever.
Thanks for letting me comment. I'll put it back to that. Thanks, Roy.
Okey-doke. Anyone else with any AI-related comments before we move on to the main segment? Okay, I'll take that as a no thank you, and as always, it's very often that even if nothing comes up during the initial AI segment, that over time people come up or we slowly trace our foot back to AI. So we may still end up talking about AI tonight. Who knows? Stay tuned and find out. This is AC2GS, and we'll move on to the main segment of our technical med, which is questions, comments, and topics. Those people with any of the above, hit that push to talk, give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's science or in technology or amateur radio related, and let's make our list. Is that it? No one else out there? It's going to be a very fast, lonely technical met. Once again, if anyone has any questions, comments, or topics for tonight, hit that push to talk and put your name on the list.
I'll retread last week's question a little bit if you like. If you don't, that's fine too.
No, it's okay. Retread away.
J-C-2-M.
Say again, most of your message was obscured by noise.
Hello, Charlie 2, Mike, Foxtrot Tango. I don't have anything to add, but I'm supporting the net over here. Over.
Oh, okay. Thank you for supporting the net. I appreciate that. Jim, what's your topic for tonight?
So last week we discussed packing a RF connector, an SL239 PL259, with dielectric grease. And I had lots of interesting suggestions. One of them was terrific about using an end connector, and I'm going to use that as part of my solution. But I don't recall that I got a good answer. Nobody was able to say assertively, you certainly can pack a SO239 PL259 connector with dielectric grease without any RF ill effects. I was just wondering if anybody else had thought about something about that in the week that followed, that counterindicates packing dielectric grease into a RF connection.
Okay, I distinctly remember repeatedly suggesting that there's nothing wrong, people do it. It gets kind of gloopy, so most people recommend, rather than packing the whole area, that you just apply it to the threads of the connector, and that would probably have the same beneficial effect. There's no technological ill effect, except that you got a glob of dielectric that's hanging out every time you disconnect it that might mess things up.
I don't know where I was heading, and the suggestion about the end connector was brilliant. My plan is to use a right angle PL259 to end connector adapter and semi-permanently put the PL259 connection all greased up and leave it that way and use the O-ring sealed end connector as the disconnect. So it's kind of a hybrid solution, but it didn't seem like there was a great consensus in some of this stuff, and I'm learning a lot. It's interesting how many different opinions there are on some of these topics.
I think the general comments last week were not that there was anything dangerous and or detrimental in the grease, but it was kind of always a case of I can tell you a better solution to your problem type of response.
No argument. I think you're characterizing it correctly. No information forthcoming. I'd be happy to leave it at that.
Okay. I leave it open to the audience. If you have any comments to be made about dielectric grease in weatherproofing connectors, feel free to hit that push-to-talk. Well, I guess the crowd has nothing much to say on the matter.
Good. Well, good fishing, Roy. KD2VHD, listening.
Okay, very good. Thank you for your participation, as always. Once again, I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm the net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics of interest, either in amateur radio, preferably, or science and technology, take the opportunity, hit that push to talk, and get your name put on the list. signal had no audio. I'm sorry, no audio at all. Check your microphone. There's no audio signal coming out of there.
November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Hello, John. You got a question or a topic for us tonight?
Just a follow-up comment on that common mode that we were talking about. That's it.
Okay. What do you got for us that's new?
No, just as I sent you in that email, I did the electronic simulator with two voltage sources, one on one end and then another one on the other one. And just for application, I think I put in 100 volts on one end and 20 volts on the other, and 20 volts, 180 degrees out of phase. And I wrote you this on the email. I'm just repeating it for the net, and came back that you would have 100, well, I'm sorry, if I used 120, you would have an 80-volt sinusoidal voltage. And what I found interesting, and this made perfect sense, was that it wouldn't affect the current at all, because looking at the current is E over R, it would just change the resistance. And later on this week, I did it with a current source on both ends, and it came to the same result, basically, that they just subtract. And it makes perfect sense, because if you even think of it in batteries, you know, it's in a series, and if you added a battery, it would add, or an AC source would add. So now you're 180 degrees out of source, out of phase, rather, you know, would just subtract. So I know I made a statement in the email. I don't think you agreed with it, but, you know, I'm just, and I'm not making a statement on this, because, you know, as far as I see, no one knows, and surely I don't. But it seems so far that that common mode feedback is something unique to coax, and you wouldn't really have a feedback with twin leads. So I just want to throw that out there. I just want to know what your thoughts were on that, or anybody else's.
Okay, and yet if you go to the source material, they seem to indicate that there is common mode occurring on open line. So either all those reference sources are wrong, or the example is kind of somewhat limited. The problem is that, if you change definitions, then that's fine. You can solve almost any problem by just changing definitions, but the literature suggests that there's common mode in open line, but the example that you gave doesn't really give you common mode. It gives you differential mode. It might be a slightly different voltage potential, but the currents are still traveling in the same direction that they did before, as opposed to what goes on in coax. I'm more than happy to kind of change definitions or disallow references that annoy and confuse me, but I don't think it has the... I don't think that's the way science usually works.
WI2U with a comment?
Sure.
Hey, Roy, this is Mike. I was listening last week to the TechNet. I wasn't able to chime in because I had some company, but I was kind of paying attention. And after the topic was brought up about common mode rejection in balanced line, I decided to do a little research myself, and I'd like to put my two cents in if I could.
Feel free. I appreciate it, Mike. I was concerned with the general lack of electrical engineers in the audience last week.
Well, I'm not so sure this will be the last word on it, but in theory, let me just say that in theory now, not in actual practice, in an absolutely theoretical balanced line, there is no common mode current at all. And the reason why I say that is because the currents are exactly equal and opposite in a balanced line. But here's the problem that can never be achieved in practice. In order to get equal and opposite currents in two lines, they have to be completely on top of each other and occupy the same space. Of course, that's impossible because they're made of matter. Any balanced line has to be separated by a very small amount of space. Now, usually the space is much, much smaller than our wavelength at the frequency that this line is to be used at, and therefore you can assume that the current is equal and opposite. But let's think about this a minute. In order for the current to be equal and opposite, that implies that that line does not radiate anything. The actual radiation field around that line in the far field must be zero. And as you know, that's not the case. Let me drop a minute. Any balanced transmission line will have a small amount of leakage. Now, it might be 70 dB down from the actual power that's in the line, but it is not zero. That implies that the current cannot be equal and opposite. If the current cannot be equal and opposite, by definition, that is called the common mode current. So I think what you want to do here, Roy, is try to separate theory from practice. Theoretically, there is no common mode current, but in practice, because these lines cannot be occupying the same space, the currents have to be different. And if they're different at all, that line radiates something, and if that line radiates something, that is a common mode situation. Back to net, WI2U.
Okay, Mike, I agree with you. It makes a lot of sense, and I was just discussing theoretical versus practical with a ham this afternoon on the telephone. So I agree with you on that level. I mean, you could make the same case for a perfect coaxial cable. Even a perfect coaxial cable ultimately has some degree of bleed. It might be 100 decibels down, but it's not zero. So, you know, you can kind of say the case in general. Okay, but then, you know, with coax cable, you have a very nice way of explaining where the extra current is coming from and going to. With open line, it's not that it's superimposed on one of the lines, but it's part of one of the lines. One of the lines itself is unbalanced and somewhat differential and somewhat radiating. So the idea of it being a common mode, I don't know. It sounds like there should be some other name for that mode as opposed to common mode, because it strikes me that the differential versus common modes are very, very, very wide apart for cases like open line, as opposed to coaxial cable, where you could have much more significant differences in the currents from the outer shield to the inner shield.
Yeah, I agree with you, but that's because in the coaxial cable situation, you can and do usually have two different currents. You have the inner current, which is due to the fact that it's in close proximity to the center conductor of the coax, and you have the, it looks like it's the same connection, but in actuality it is not. You have another current flowing on the outside, which is closer to space and not under the influence directly of the center conductor. So yes, you're right. When someone thinks about coaxial line, there's a definite distinction between how the currents travel in the coax and on the surface of the coax. In the case of the balance line, I think the only thing that I can point out is that it's a spatial difference, because the two lines are separated by a small amount of physical space. You cannot have them equal and opposite. So subtle, yes, but I think that could be a possible way to explain what would somebody would call a common mode current displacement on balanced line. Not as clean cut as coax, definitely for sure, but I think we can rationalize it the way I did and maybe make some sense out of it that way. Excuse me, back to net, WI2U.
AC2GS. Yeah, I at best I can conceive of it as a desperate rationalization. Again, it'll probably burn out the brains of most people who don't know or care much about reflective power and skin effect and those other things. Because, again, you could make pretty pictures that explains it all. When you try to draw something related to open line, it's kind of like magic. You just have to believe.
I don't think I would want to undertake the mathematics of what's going on. You know, you're talking about 0.000, some very small fraction of the actual, what I would call the balance current on the line, which would make the common mode problem. Usually when anybody who takes a course in electromagnetic field theory, you automatically assume these lines are balanced, make the mathematics simple, and you go with it from there. It would be a terrific mathematical undertaking to try to predict what the actual value of this small differential current, I'm sorry, this small unbalanced current would be. I don't know of anyone who's ever done it or never seen anything published on it. It just is not done because the current is so small.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess, unfortunately, we're going to leave it at that until... for a long, long time. But let me put a fly in the ointment. What about an open line that has an imbalanced system that has reflections? So you have a partial current coming up from the open line transmission wires, and it's being reflected back down. How does that jive with common mode currents and such?
Well, I think if the line is perfectly balanced, when I mean perfectly balanced, I mean perfectly symmetrical about a center, which I'll call ground. You can call it reference, you can call it whatever you want. If this line has conductor number one and conductor number two with the same intrinsic impedance to ground for reference, I think the reflected current and the incident current are all balanced and equal. So therefore, you can say that under those conditions, there's no common mode reflected current either. Now, of course, if there are unequal lengths in an antenna, or if the antenna has an environment where one leg, for example, is more coupled impedance-wise to some reference, then the currents can't be equal. There's got to be a current flowing to ground. But in the absence of that current flowing to ground, reflected current and incident current should all be balanced. No common mode, in my opinion.
Yeah, but isn't that back on a theoretical basis? Haven't we shifted back out of practical experience to theoretical constructs?
Oh, yeah, I'm assuming, of course, that situation can be realized where you've got the same exact impedance between one conductor to ground and the same exact impedance from the other conductor to ground. Theoretically, yes. Practically, almost impossible.
Okay, so as long as, well, you have to sit on practical, and then when someone like me brings this other thing in, you shift directly into theoretical, and then I guess when I turn my radio off, you can shift back into practical. It's I don't know. It's a dicey solution to the problem. I mentioned I don't know if you heard that segment last week where this was very reminiscent to me of my perpetual problems with near field, far field electromagnetic waves. That in the near field there is a quadrature link between magnetic and electric fields, and when it reaches the far field, it has become a synchronous. Both of the fields are synchronized. So, you know, like I said last week, I read a guy's PhD paper on the subject, and I'm still confused.
I would venture a guess that the gentleman who wrote the PhD paper himself is probably confused. To my knowledge, that is still not very well understood, how it can turn out that you have two quadrature fields, and then a short distance away they happen to realign themselves and become somewhat in phase. That makes no sense to me, And that's a big cop-out in any course that you take in electromagnetic theory, too. So, no, it's not very much understood, Roy, sorry to say. So, you're not alone.
Okay, I'm glad I have company. You know, if I'm confused, at least it's good to have company of being confused. I thank you very much, Mike. This is certainly the primary answer to the question. I don't know if we'll find a better one, but we'll put this on the top of the list.
Okay, and if I find out anything else or if I can do any other research and come across another explanation, I'll be very happy to supply it. But, okay, we can table this for now, I guess. Thanks, guys. WI2U.
Okay, thank you so much, Mike. I really do appreciate it. Well, John, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what you were saying in the beginning of the net, where you can have a conversation and people are talking about different things. So, even goes back further than that, when that first gentleman said that he asked a very, very simple but specific question, and nobody really answered the question. There was a lot of answers, but not to that, and not that people didn't supply answers or information, like this gentleman there, forgive me, I think his name is Mike, I forget your call sign, but I agree with everything he said, but my only query into this whole thing was that the pathway for the common mode, not that I think you got a little, when I said redefining it, you thought I wanted to create new science or something. No, I'm not. I'm just saying that it seems to me, and I'm not making a statement, you know, because I'm out here to put it out and see if anyone else has any ideas, that common mode may be something that common mode feedback on a transmission line may be something that you need coax because of the avenue that it can travel down on the inside braided part, where on a balance line, it doesn't have that avenue, and it seems to take care of itself, for lack of a better expression, right at a certain point. And when I use those generators, again, one being 180 degrees out of phase, you know, the current goes up, and then it gets reflected back. That seems to be the issue. So not trying to say there is not a common mode or, you know, on a balanced line that the phenomenon isn't there, but it seems to just, from what I'm seeing, just negates, reduces the effective power going up there, and it doesn't have a way to travel back down the line. And like I wrote in that email, I myself have experienced common mode via coax and took care of it with a, you know, an RF trap up by the antenna, and that was it, eliminated it. I have never experienced having common mode come back into the shack using twin leaf, but my experience is so limited that, you know, I don't know if anybody else did. So that was one that I'd be interested to hear if anybody else got zapped using twin lead. It wasn't a ground problem. It was common mode coming back, and more or less proves it by putting up a trap, a ballon or, you know, some sort of an RF trap up there and eliminated by that. So that was really precisely just my whole inquiry. You know, I just don't see a route for common mode to travel back down the transmission line the way it does with coax in a balanced line. That's it.
I may have an answer for that there, Roy.
Sure, please.
Yeah, I think the degree that you're talking about, I think the common mode current does exist also on balanced line. The problem is, it's so smaller than the current that you could have, the common mode current that you could have on a coax, that it would be virtually unnoticeable for you doing a measurement in the shack. You won't be zapped like you will for having RF in the shack, and You have RF in the shack regardless because the line is radiating something. Again, it could be 90 dB down on an extremely well-balanced line, but there is going to be some radiation, and there is going to be some, you can use the word feedback if you want. There is going to be some amount of RF on transmission line, even though it's balanced, running back in the shack. It's just that it's so far down, you'll never notice it. In coax, it could be close to equal if you happen to have a very severe mismatched case of trying to drive a balanced antenna from a coax, you're very much on balance line. So that, to me, is the reason why you never saw it on balanced line. It's just so small, you'll never even know it's there. Go ahead.
Comment? Yes.
Yeah, let me ask the station there, I believe it's Mike. The radiation that you would get on the twin lead, wouldn't that be differential mode radiation? I'd like to hear what you think about that.
John, I'm sorry, what was the word you used before radiation? I missed it.
Yeah, like you said, that you get radiation, which I agree with everything you said. You get radiation on the balanced line, you get radiation on the coax. But wouldn't that be differential mode that would be given the radiation? That was the impression conclusion that I was under, that is differential mode radiation that you're getting. It's not common mode coming back. It could be, I never really thought about it, but basically the radiation, if you have a mismatch or whatever, you could still get radiation on the feed line, that would be a differential mode.
I don't think I would call it differential mode because the currents are supposedly close to equal and opposite. So if they're differentially equal, that means you're not going to have any radiation. What causes the radiation is the fact that they're not equal, and that's common mode. So, no, I wouldn't call it differential at all, John, sorry. I'd have to choose a different word for it.
82 VHD.
Yeah? Yes, Jim?
Out on a limb here, as you know, electronically, I'm not up to the level of these other guys. But the last statement really it rang a bell for me. Is this an electronics or physics or, problem, a science problem, or is it a nomenclature or a language problem? If we called it uncoupled current, would all these difficulties just go away? Is it just a bad term? Seems like common mode current to me. I don't know. I may sound completely silly, sorry, but thank you.
Not necessarily. We're talking electrodynamics, but we're using the English language because most of us were born in New York. The problem is that the nature of common mode we're used to that occurs on coaxial cables are orders of magnitude stronger and have significant interactions and effect. They cause a lot of RF in our shack. They cause all manner of, they can cause all manner of problems, being a transmission line that should be a transmission line and not be a radiating antenna. So I think it's magnitude that gives us a problem. The fact that nothing is practically, theoretically perfect. You don't have a perfectly balanced set of currents, so there is a non-differential aspect, even in a perfect, in a practical reality-based balanced line. And I think that's where we're having loads and loads of problems, that we keep thinking of the term common mode in the magnitudes that we see in transmission, in coaxial transmission lines, as opposed to a more theoretical concept that's apparent in balanced line, where the amount of energy that's being dissipated in common mode is pathetically small.
That was well said, Roy. Excellent.
George, KD2FIU.
Hello, George. You got any good comments?
Okay, I was waiting for that to subside. Well, the thing is, I find that it's the signal going forward or the signal received is going to receive a loss because of what it's returning. Common mode? It's not really, to me, a good term. As I learned, when I started with AT&T long lines about 50 years ago, and we were into transmission lines, I was into transmission lines, picturing on a pair of two wires, if the two wires were traveling X amount of feet, X amount of miles, just go and go and go, there was going to be a return, even if they are perfectly balanced. As mentioned, if the signals are perfectly balanced on top of each other, you're going to have what's called a return loss. So what's happening on our coax, common mode, yeah, traveling down, it's a return that's going to cause loss of forward, gain, and received gain. The concept is really not common mode, it's return loss.
No, he's confusing VSWR and common mode, comment, that they're not the same.
No, it's not. It's not SWR whatsoever. On sealed cables that are designed to avoid all of that SWR loss. No, negative. It's a return loss. The signal's traveling from one side to the other.
I got news for you, sir. Return loss is VSWR.
I'm sorry. I can't agree with this, so I got to bow out. KD2FIU, not in the engineering that I learned.
Okay, George. I appreciate your participation. Anyway. Yes, Frank?
Yeah, okay, I had to wait for the vet carrier to clear. Yeah, I don't know too much about the engineering there. I probably knew it at one time, but don't really remember. But I do remember that probably back in the 70s or 80s, probably back in the 80s. Yes, I'm an old-timer these days. My dad put up an off-center fed, or I think it's called today an off-center fed dipole, what he knew was a ZEP antenna, because it was used on the things like the Hindenburg in the 1930s. Is probably why it's not a popular antenna today. Now, seriously, anyway, was fed with an open line, and apparently the open line that was so unbalanced, I loaded my SD220 into it near the legal limit to work New Zealand on 75 meters at 2 in the morning, and woke up the downstairs neighbors, because I came blasting through their stereo with the stereo turned off. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's unbalanced. Yeah, every so often we kind of stray onto the theoretical land. You know, we jump from theoretical to practical to theoretical to practical. Again, this is not a simple question, not a simple answer. I think Mike has given us the closest answer we're going to get to in the foreseeable future. And, you know, right after they figure out how near-field, far-field electromagnetic waves work the way they're seen to work, I'm sure they'll work real hard on whether or not there's much in the way of common mode. Again, I tend to think the thing to walk away from tonight's discussion on the concept was that although the word is the same, the definition, the characteristics in each of these transmission lines is considerably different in practical experiences, which is why you hear a lot of people talking about common mode in relation to coaxial cable, and pretty much no one talking about open line. Although, you know, open line is used a lot less these days. It used to be the transmission line of choice before World War II, but as soon as World War II excess transmission lines, coax cables were available to us cheap hams, it has completely taken over 98% of the transmission lines used by us. So I think that's the story for tonight. The orders of magnitude of both types of common mode are incredibly different and lead to different experiences.
November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Yes, John.
Yeah, I just, going to let it go here. I just wanted to thank Mike and yourself, because Mike made a very, very clear distinction of something that I said, and I'm going to stand corrected that I felt, well, the radiation going up, that's the differential mode, and no, he corrected me. If it's differential, differential wouldn't radiate, and this goes back to something that you had said, a problem that exists. We use so many terms, and some of them aren't really that good, but if we're going to use these terms, that's the definition of it. So I thank Mike, and I thank you for, piggybacking on that, and we put that to rest. So I'm going to let this topic go. I don't want to hold up the net here. November 2 is Zulu Charlie. Thank you to everybody. And AC2GS, back to you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, John. I appreciate, as always, your participation. You always get people's heart rate going up and blood pressure going up a little bit, which is good occasionally. So I thank you for all your participation in our net here. This is AC2GS. Once again, this is the Limark Technical Net. If anyone has any technical questions or amateur radio-related questions or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk and put your name on the list.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I've heard of a cable that's the locomotive cable. I've been reading about it a lot lately. It's like this indestructible cable. And it seems like it would be a great idea that, have L-259s on the end of it, where you could use it like for a jumper cable for a rotator. Mine's okay. If I was ever going to change it, boy, this stuff, if you read about it, this stuff is just indestructible. Mix it with oil and heat. It's impervious to anything. It's very flexible. An antenna could turn like a million times, and apparently this cable would never wear out. So, I could picture a 6-foot jumper or something. But I looked it up, DX Engineering or anything. It doesn't look like anybody sells anything like that. But I'm sure it would be great. It's called a diesel locomotive cable. Back you are.
stuff.
Okay, that's interesting. I got to look that up. Are the dimensions the same as most coax cables, or is it extremely thick or heavy, or there's got to be some downside. There's always a payback.
Well, they said it goes down. They go down from 14 gauge all the way up to, you know, who knows what, you know. Probably a couple of aught, maybe look at it. I guess they probably use it on power systems and powerhouses or something, you know. So, but, you know, it does go down as low as 14 gauge. So I said, you know, I mean, regular cable, they're not calling coax. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for like a coax where they would have a PL259, you know, on both ends. You know, maybe PL259 on one end, you know, to connect to an antenna, and SO239 to, you know, hook up to your existing cable, you know, coming from the shack. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Okay, I'll have to take a look at that. I'm a little confused. It sounds like it's not a coaxial configuration. It's simply a wire with a insulating outer surface. But I'll take a look at it. It might simply be that it's too much trouble to obtain and stock and use, and something more like a ultraflex cable that a lot of people use for the jumpers on potatoes tends to suffice. I don't know. I'll have to take a look, see, in the literature.
PhD. These are locomotives, you know, from years ago. So they, it's actually called DL when you look it up. But, you know, it's something I can't find. You know, if you bring up AI, yeah, AI, they're not the best thing in the world to bring up AI with something like this. Yeah, they say yes, you know. You can get it, you know, for amateur radio purposes. But then when you actually research it, you know, I put in a diesel locomotive cable for sale. And with a 259 on the end. And when I do that, I get nothing. But boy, I mean, you know, I read about this stuff. You know, if they don't have it, they should have it. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I wouldn't depend upon agreeable artificial intelligence. Probably, if you asked it, if told it that you had a favorite rabbit that talked English, and how many rabbits talk English in the United States, they give you a non-zero number. Jim, what did you want to say?
I couldn't but help but comment on the PL259 connector. When I was involved in radio years ago, in the 70s, CP, was in my youth, the 12-volt power connections were abysmal. There was no good way to do it. And you had to deal with the PL259, SO239, which sucked then, as it does now. But nowadays, you can plug a power pole connection for your power, and it's just terrific. It's easy, it's simple, it's straightforward, it works, it's durable, it's reliable, it's repeatable. And the PL259, SO239 connection still sucks. Sorry for the language, but it sucks. It's a shame it wound up being the standard, because I can't imagine what could be worse.
Well, I mean, worst comes to worst. If you want to, you can try out N connectors. A lot of people like N connectors. They don't like UHF connectors for a bunch of different reasons. One is that it's not inherently waterproof, that it doesn't have a, strictly speaking, 50-ohm impedance. It's a little bit off on that. Still, most people use it, most people tolerate it, and it works for them. There are people who don't like power poles, I'm sorry to tell you. I have not an absolute hatred of them, but a suspicion of them.